What's up, and thank you for joining the Lantern Football Podcast. I'm Dan Herbner, alongside my partner, always as in crime, Colin Hossel. Colin, it is Wednesday afternoon. Finals weeks are coming up, but the Big Ten Championship is coming up sooner. Yeah. How are you?
Well, that's clearly the most important event in the next couple weeks.
I would say so myself, as Ohio State did march to a 42-28 victory over that team up north. And a big win in the shoe. However, they did have a couple losses over the weekend. First of all, I just want to share my condolences with the Kara George family. Obviously, a tough loss there for Ohio State, but more importantly, his family and his friends. It's very difficult. Obviously, like we said last week about Noah Spence, this is a podcast about football, so we just want to talk about the sport all the time. But what you don't get as much is the people side of it, and obviously, prayers go out to the family.
Sad news.
As well, JT Barrett lost for the season on a much lighter, but JT Barrett still lost for the season in this game. Now Cardale Jones will take over in the upcoming weeks. We'll get to Cardale talk later, but Colin, what did you see in this Michigan game? Obviously, it was a bit of a struggle early on, but Ohio State found a way to pull it out.
I mean, you can't really get to the game until you just get by the fact that we've had two Heisman candidates at quarterback get hurt this year, and we're down to our last. Is he our last quarterback on the roster?
There is a redshirt freshman.
Oh yeah,
who would have to burn his redshirt, Stephen Collier, who would have to burn his redshirt to be eligible to play in the Big Ten Championship.
God, talk about a nightmare scenario.
Urban Meyer said that Plan B is Jalen Marshall, who was an All-State quarterback in high school. So maybe we'll
Number 17. Okay, I was going to start with JT, but now you run up Jalen. Where was Jalen? I mean, it seemed like Ohio State was really lacking Jalen's playmaking early in the game, and I mean, sure, he's been inconsistent in his care of the football, but I mean, you just gotta live and die with him. Sometimes he's so talented; he's more talented than any other player on the Buckeyes' offensive, I guess, wide receivers and running backs.
Totally agree. I think the offense looked a little vanilla, honestly, against this Michigan defense. And we talked about on the previous podcast how Michigan has a good defense, but I don't think it was anything that Ohio State needed to be scared
about. Certainly not like the
about.
One that they're going to be facing this week.
Exactly, and like I said, it's nothing that Ohio State had to be scared about. They ran the ball particularly well, obviously running for 6 yards a carry and over 200 yards against a vaunted run defense is always good. They didn't throw the ball particularly well, and it wasn't because of the offensive line. JT Barrett had a lot of time to throw the ball. There just weren't guys open down the field, and we didn't talk about Michigan's secondary as being a threat.
No,
we thought
that's
where they could exploit Michigan.
And nor
possibly.
Did we talk about their pass rush, which obviously Ohio State's offensive line didn't have an issue. It was the wide receivers getting open. So we had Devin Smith with one catch for 52 yards, and then not a single other player caught more than 34 total yards in the game, and only one player caught over 28. So, I mean, you could say, oh, they're spreading the ball around, but they only passed for 176 yards. They had severe issues.
The throw to Devin Smith was really the only attempt that JT took down the field the whole time, and it just leads me to believe that nobody was open throughout the game.
Yeah.
And that will be an issue coming against the second-rated passing defense of Wisconsin and moving forward if they do, in fact, know
they're certainly not going to have as much time. Cardale now is not going to have much time in the pocket because you got to think he's going to be getting more pressure because he's completely inexperienced.
You would assume that more people would be in the box. Obviously, moving to the other side of the football, Ohio State's defense did not look very convincing. They gave up four drives of over 75 yards for touchdowns. There was a big drive in the second quarter, which was rather troubling, in which Michigan went 15 plays for 95 yards in 7 minutes. That's something that they can't afford to do this upcoming week because, obviously, Cardale Jones, like I said, the offense looked vanilla. The offense is going to look even more vanilla with Cardale Jones because he has a week to absorb this whole playbook. And, yeah, he's been working through the spring, but all the different checks and stuff, that's out the window. You're just going to be handing the ball off a lot, and it's not going to be as wide open as it is with JT Barrett. So you can't have long drives defensively
if the defense allows long drives, then that's going to put more pressure on Cardale to score on every single drive because Wisconsin's going to come in here with Melvin Gordon and a great offense, but even an even better defense. And if Cardale has to face one of the best defenses in the nation, and he must score on every possession, it's going to be difficult. And like you just said, the Wolverines, they drove the ball out a few times. They had drives, touchdown drives of 80, 95, and 75 yards. It's absurd. That's long drives.
It was good to see the run defense get back at it. 38 carries for 121 yards. That's only 3.2 a carry. That's pretty good. Down by the goal line, they didn't do very well, but obviously that's a product of their secondary giving up passing yards. I still don't think the tackling on this team is very crisp. I think, especially from the linebackers and into the secondary, I think the tackling's been very bad.
And you were talking about your boy Curtis Grant, the leader.
No, he is. Oh my goodness.
But he hasn't played very well.
No, he hasn't. And there was a play where he stepped up, and it was third down and two, and they gave the ball to their fullback Carriage, and he stepped up and tried to make a tackle, and he hit him at the line and stoned him, and it was like, okay, we got to stop. And Carriage just ran him over for the first down, and it was just like, that is just a synecdoche of his entire career at Ohio State. He has struggled. He struggled mightily at linebacker. We thought coming into this year that he would be somebody to count on. And obviously he's been a leader, I guess, but he hasn't played.
Lately, I mean, I would have preferred to see a little bit more Raekwon McMillan. We saw him earlier in the year. He made a few plays. I think he had a two-sack game at one point. And I don't know. We just haven't seen a lot of him lately. So we had another player we hadn't seen a lot of lately was Joey Bosa, and he made his presence known later in the game when he got that strip sack and Darren Lee recovered and basically put the game away 42-21.
He did. There were also two different plays, though, where I was rather concerned, and it was, and I mean, it's something that you just get on a guy. It's a play where he jumps off sides on third and six. It's a play where he forced a fumble, but he jumps off sides and then the drive keeps going. They end up scoring a touchdown, and another drive earlier in the game where he, on a play where I don't know who it was, somebody got a sack in the backfield and he comes up from behind and just blatantly rips Devin Gardner's helmet off just in a very unnecessary play, a rivalry play. And it's like, okay, well, the fans like that, but it's a 15-yard penalty and Michigan goes down and scores again. It's like, you just can't have those mistakes. If anybody's earned the right to make mistakes, it's been Joey Bosa, especially defensively. But you can't have those mistakes, especially when the margin of error is going to be so little with a backup quarterback in like it is this upcoming week.
So before we move on, I want to go back. When we were talking about the long drives that Michigan had, so part of that is on the bad defense, but also they've had to go a long way, which is why I'm going to mention Cameron Johnson, the punter. He's put the Buckeyes in some great situations defensively. I mean, he's as good as a weapon as they have, as the Buckeyes have. Whenever their drives stall, you can always count on him for pinning the opposition back in their own inside the 20 a lot.
I completely agree. And the old adage that our high school coach, Coach Mark Imerino, had was end every drive with a kick, and that is an extra point, a field goal, or a punt. And what people don't understand is that a punt can be a valuable play. And when you have a guy like Cameron Johnson who can get a boot, I mean, a 67-yard touchback, that only has a net of 47, but that still tops in the NCAA when you look at it. I mean, he's a guy who you can definitely count on to pin the ball deep in the opponent's territory time and time again.
And he's put the defense in some good positions. They just got to play better.
Right. He's a super valuable weapon. It's great to have.
Totally him. Undervalued too.
He is absolutely. And Sean Nuremberg, I mean, as a kicker, has struggled. And there was a point in the game. It was early on, and it looked like Ohio State was ready to take over the game, and they were going to kick a 49-yard field goal, but they chose to bypass that and just punt the ball, and that shows the differences in trust that Sean Nuremberger has with Cameron Johnson. Now, moving on from this to rankings, Ohio State came in fifth in the latest college football playoff rankings this weekend with Florida State 4, TCU 3, Oregon 2, Alabama 1, Baylor 6 behind them. Those are the one-loss teams. What exactly did you make of these latest rankings? Obviously, a little bit of movement at the top.
So, it was sort of, it's weird. Because I didn't totally understand it. Because coming into this week, if you told me that all the teams except for Florida State were going to have one loss again and Mississippi State was just going to be out of it, I would have thought Florida State would come at 3 again, considering they still haven't lost to anyone. Sure, they haven't played the greatest schedule, but they've beat teams. TCU and Baylor, I didn't think they had such a gap, and now TCU's 3 and Baylor 6, and personally, I'm going to put Baylor ahead of TCU, which is just, I don't understand how there's two teams between Baylor and TCU, and I was very confident about Ohio State's ability to jump the Big 12 and get in. And now I'm not, now that TCU is number three and Ohio State's down at five. I came into this, came into the rankings being much more confident Ohio State's chances of making it than...
Going out of it, I didn't feel happy at all. Excuse me. Florida State sitting sort of as a barrier for Ohio State right now. That's what they did. It gave TCU a cushion, which I thought was absurd. And also,
before we move on, I saw that they're, one of the college football committee people, they said that if Florida State wins the ACC championship, then they don't see them falling. So that's not a team that Ohio State even has to look at. They have to hope that Alabama or Oregon lose, or something happens where Ohio State can jump TCU.
If Florida State loses, they're bounced. I have no idea. Idea how you drop an undefeated team, and no. I have no idea how Baylor's below TCU at this point. If you're going to tell me right now that an unranked Minnesota win is what's keeping Baylor from being ahead of TCU,
it's going to be interesting, because maybe right now that's true, but Baylor plays Kansas State, who's ranked number 9. So here's a theoretical. Say both Baylor, TCU, and Ohio State wins. Maybe TCU drops down because they only beat Iowa State. That's who they have this week. But does Baylor, like, do they jump TCU and Ohio State and basically switch rankings? I have no idea how this is going to play out.
I don't get it either. And I think TCU sitting there at three is the committee. This is where things get so difficult. They need a college champion, too. Because I look at this from my BCS perspective, because that's what I've had for pretty much my entire life growing up. And what it is, it's not the BCS. What they want to do is they want to put the best four teams in, but I don't think it should be that way. Yes, the best four teams is your hope, but what you're trying to do is you're trying to get some sort of concoction of the best four teams and the most four deserving teams. It's got to be a mixture. And to say that TCU, who lost head-to-head to Baylor, to say that they deserve it more than Baylor, it just doesn't make any sense. And I guess if Baylor does beat Kansas State, then they have more of an argument than they do this week. But looking at this, I mean, Florida State, how do you drop a team who wins? It doesn't make any sense. What they're doing is it shows that they're sort of making it seem like winning isn't the most important thing.
They dropped into a team that lost to that beat Kansas by 4 2 weeks ago. It's not like them juggernaut that's come along.
Their resumes are exactly the same. Every team in the Big 12 plays each other. The resumes are technically exactly the same, minus a win against Minnesota for TCU.
I think we're sort of on the same page, except for they haven't accounted for the Kansas State win. So I'm not gonna hold it against them as much as you do right now.
Right, I understand that.
If it's that way next week, then we're gonna have a conversation.
And what you can say about Florida State is, you know what? This isn't the BCS, and the fact of the matter is, this committee does have the opportunity to set you at four, but say, okay, you're still in the tournament.
All right,
you're still in. All you want to do is get in.
Finally, do you think Ohio State is going to... If Ohio State wins this week and every team above and below them... When I say below, I mean Baylor. Do you think Ohio State makes it?
No. Don't think they do it. I think it's the same four. I think it's the exact same four. Maybe TCU. I think TCU moves to four. TCU moves to four. Florida State...
I think there's about 33% chance that Ohio State would make it, a 33% chance that TCU would make it, and a 33% chance that Baylor would jump
It's absurd. There's no consistency with what they say. But like I said, it's a playoff, so what they do is that Florida State dropping down, they can just be happy to make it. You look at Ohio State, if they do in fact make it, they're probably going to have to play Alabama. But all Ohio State wants to do is make it in the tournament. That's what this is all about. And for TCU to be sitting ahead, it's just absurd to me, but there's nothing we can do till next week, so we might as well just move on to talking about Wisconsin, because that actually is a game that will happen this upcoming weekend. We now welcome in Doug Lemerese. He writes about Ohio State football for Cleveland.com. Doug, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's hard that this has to be the first question, but obviously JT Barrett going down is very difficult for this Ohio State football team. So what do you see this offense looking like with Cardale Jones at the helm?
I think they have to mix it up. I don't think they can do the same old stuff. Cardale Jones has a big arm. I think the worst thing they could do is try to rely on a deep passing game. you know, they got into that Virginia Tech game and they threw the ball too deep, too often, trying to beat that nine men in the box defense. I think they have to try to spread Wisconsin out. I think they have to use Jalen Marshall in the Wildcat, maybe even have him throw a little bit out of that quarterback position. They have to get the ball quickly to their playmakers, like Marshall, like Michael Thomas, like their tight end, like Curtis Samuel. And they have to run it with Ezekiel Elliott. I really don't think they could put too much on Cardale Jones. He's a different kind of quarterback. There's going to be an adjustment for any guy making his first start, much less making his first start in a conference title game. So I think they have to get creative. I think they have to use their strengths. And I think certainly Urban Meyer and Tom Herman have that capability, but I think they have a lot of work to do this week.
All right, so staying on the offense, obviously, JT Barrett, he's much more experienced as a passer than Cardale. When Cardale came in, there's usually a lot of running. Do you see Wisconsin just loading up the box? And if you do, do you think Ohio State's going to have issues throwing the ball downfield with Cardale since he's so inexperienced?
Yeah, I mean, if I was Wisconsin, that's what I would do. I would try to make Cardale beat you over the top until he proves he can do it. Now, again, the number one thing people talk about is Cardale Jones. He's a great big guy, 6'5", he's 250, and he can throw it. He can throw it through a wall, they say. People tell stories about him, you know, kneeling at midfield and throwing passes into the end zone. I mean, he has a crazy good arm. But can he complete passes deep? Just because you can throw it deep doesn't mean you're going to complete passes deep. So if I was Wisconsin, I would make them do that. I would try to take away Ezekiel Elliott, take away the short passing game, and see what happens there. Because, I mean, you really got to have some touch on that. They do certainly have a great default threat in Devin Smith. But, you know, we just don't know if Cardale Jones is going to complete those. So I would expect him to try to do that. Ezekiel Elliott's a really good back, and this offensive line improved. I would expect take that away and make Cardale beat you.
Obviously, this Wisconsin defense comes into this game highly ranked, and it seems like every single statistical category that people keep track of in college football. But do you feel like that's more of a product of the schedule that they've played throughout this year? Because it has been weaker. The best offense they played is Nebraska. The best passing offense is Illinois. Do you feel like that's more of why they're so highly ranked, or do you feel like it's kind of a combination of that and just sheer talent?
You know, I know they were replacing a lot of guys up front in their front seven this year, so the expectations for the defense coming in maybe weren't that high. You know, when you play in the Big Ten, sometimes that happens. I mean, you know, when your schedule is Northwestern and Purdue and Illinois and teams like that, they're not exactly going to light you up. I mean, if you look, there's a lot of Big Ten defenses ranked among the top 20 or 30 in the conference, and that's part of the reason. But I do think they're pretty good. You know, I think Ohio State has seen some pretty good defenses the past couple weeks, you know. We know Penn State had a good defense. You know, Michigan's defense last week was pretty decent coming in statistically, had some playmakers, certainly gave Ohio State a little bit of trouble early. So I do believe Wisconsin played some decent defense, but, you know, I think it's more about that Ohio State, frankly, when it has faced good defenses this year. You know, when they were rolling and scoring 50 points a game, they were facing defenses ranked in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 100 nationally. When they've played defenses ranked in the top 30, Virginia Tech, Penn State, now Michigan, Michigan State, they lit up. The other game, they've had a little trouble with that, and the offense has been a little stagnant. So I think, yeah, I mean, there are things that are a concern for Ohio State, partly because of Wisconsin's defense, but partly because Ohio State against solid defenses hasn't always been great this year.
So moving on to the other side of the ball, I mean, we only know one name on Wisconsin. Everyone's heard it millions of times now, Melvin Gordon, Melvin Gordon, Melvin Gordon. And we know Ohio State, despite the fact that Michigan only ran for 3.2 yards a carry last week, Ohio State struggled against the run a lot. How can he possibly be stopped? He's such a talented back.
It's crazy how good he is. I mean, I thought Tevin Coleman was awesome when Ohio State put Indiana. Like, that guy got the ball, I thought that guy looks like an NFL running back right now. And Ohio State did a decent job against him, except for the 90-yard touchdown run and the 50-yard-something touchdown run. You know, you can't take those away. He gained more than 200 yards. But down in, down out, he didn't kill him. They held him about 3.3 yards per carry on his other carries beyond those two big touchdowns. But Melvin Gordon's about a half step up from Tevin Coleman, first of all. He's just a little bit better back. And then second of all, Indiana had no passing game. Indiana was on their fifth-string quarterback. Wisconsin doesn't the year. Their offensive line is good. We know that. They're Wisconsin. So Melvin Gordon has more around him. So, I mean, that's part of it, too, is that, you know, that Tevin Coleman comparison is very interesting to me because I felt like Tevin Coleman was almost doing it by himself for a little bit. Melvin Gordon, even though obviously Wisconsin's run first, he doesn't have to do it by himself, which allows him to be even better and makes him, even though Ohio State's faced a lot of guys who are 100-yard-per-game rushers this year, Melvin Gordon is just another step up in class, I think.
We've seen Ohio State play against some solid run teams the past couple weeks, as you mentioned, Tevin Coleman and Minnesota. And what we've seen is them sort of show this almost stubbornness to want to stay in their 4-3 defense and not bring an extra safety down. Last year against Wisconsin, they went into a cover one, and they did load the box against Melvin Gordon, and they had success in doing so. Do you expect to see a little bit of that this upcoming weekend?
You know, I think they probably do have to try maybe something a little different with the run defense, but if you talk to them, I mean, they sort of say what I've been saying, that, you know, listen, we gave up some big plays, but for the most part, it's not like we got, you know, we weren't giving up 7 yards per carry. I think, you know, when you look at, for instance, the Cincinnati game earlier in the year, when they hit 3 touchdowns of 60 yards or more, I think it was, you know what, sometimes it's like, well, if they're going to run on us, maybe we'll take that, you know, rather than getting beat over the top. And there's been a lot of talk this week, and Urban Meyer's sort of been talking about, you know, the pass defense was the thing. They killed this team at the end last year. So all we talked about was fix the pass defense, fix the pass defense. Now here we are, pass defense is better. And now we're talking about the run defense. But, you know, if you can somehow avoid the big plays, you know, sometimes, I mean, it's nice to bring that safety down, but if you can sort of pin them in a little bit, you don't want to give Wisconsin a chance to beat you over the top because you're so fixated on Melvin Gordon. So, yeah, I mean, I think you want to change up your looks, but I think they want to maybe, I don't think they'll settle out so hard to stop the run that they make themselves vulnerable to one-on-one stuff over the top.
Mm-hmm. So, before we move on to the key of the game of the prediction, do you think, who's someone else on Wisconsin that we need to know about that's a playmaker other than, is there like a single guy who just flies under the radar on their team, do you think?
No, I'm not a Wisconsin expert. I don't know. I'm a man. Melvin Gordon's famous. I know Joel Stame had the yips for a while this year. It had straightened out a little bit. I'm assuming they got big, mm-hmm. 300-pound dude on the front line. But, really, for this game, I mean, I don't think it's just one side of the ball. I think it's the whole game. I think if Ohio State can limit Melvin Gordon, they have a very good chance. If Melvin Gordon goes crazy, Ohio State's going to lose.
Well, like you said, their offensive line averages 6'5", 320. So, yeah, they got some big boys. And they got D1 athletes on the outside, so we should expect to see some of those guys getting used as well. But changing gears a bit before we get into keys and predictions, Ohio State came in 5th in the playoff rankings, followed by Florida State, TCU, Oregon, and Alabama. That's in ascending order. Looking at that ranking for Ohio State, how do you feel about their chances going into this weekend and possibly after what the result comes in on Saturday?
Yeah, not great. I mean, I see it. You'll find plenty of people who are expecting chaos and think Ohio State's in good shape. A lot of people have been predicting for weeks, if Ohio State wins out, Ohio State's in. And I've kind of been fighting against that, saying, you know, I just don't think that's the case. You know, we talk about chaos a lot, and you expect it every year. I think everybody ahead of them might win. I mean, TCU has an easy game. I think Bama is not going to go into that SEC title game and lose to Missouri. I don't see that. Oregon's already lost to Arizona once. Oregon's on the cusp. The guy who's going to win the Heisman at quarterback, I don't see Oregon losing to Arizona twice in the same season. But Florida State's nuts, man. I mean, Florida State, if they haven't lost by now, I don't think they're going to get to their conference title game and lose either. So I think Ohio State is very likely going to get left out of this. And there's enough other little things, you know, if TCU lose, you know, well, TCU's not going to win. TCU's going to win. But Baylor, I think, if Baylor beats Kansas State, mm-hmm. they somehow could be a threat. I think the best thing, the easiest path for Ohio State is Florida State loses and Ohio State wins. And if Florida State falls behind them, the committee's not going to put two Big 12 teams in ahead of Ohio State. That'd be a very mm-hmm. easy way for Ohio State to move up. But even like if Bama loses, I think Bama could stay in the top four. But I just think it's a tough road for Ohio State. I think, frankly, if anybody in the top six, the probably think Ohio State has the best chance of any of them to actually lose this season.
One thing we do know is that it's a fluid situation, and for Ohio State's sake, hopefully there is some fluidity up at the top four, but until this weekend, we won't really know. But something we like to do at the end of each of these shows is give a one key to the game and then a final score prediction. And since you're the guest, Doug, we will let you lead off with your key to the game.
I'll say stopping Melvin Gordon for somebody else. I'm going to say the key to the game is finding a way to use Jalen Marshall effectively. Jalen Marshall did not touch the ball very much against Michigan in the first half last week. We saw how dangerous he could be the week before with four touchdowns in different ways. I really think they're going to work him in at quarterback one way or another. Tom Herman said this week, Jalen Marshall throws it much better than you think. I think that's something to keep in mind. I think with JT Barrett out, Jalen Marshall is the guy closest to the ball. He's going to be right in there. You don't have to, you know, throw it 30 yards down the field to get him the ball. I think they have to get Jalen Marshall involved in a very serious, dynamic way for Ohio State to win. That's my key.
So I will give you my key. My key, I'll do the Melvin Gordon key. I'm not afraid of that. Curtis Grant and the linebackers, Curtis Grant hasn't, like we touched on before he came on, one of the issues that Ohio State's had is they've given up long, long drives, and with a team as successful at running the ball as Wisconsin, they're susceptible to it even more so than last week by far. I mean, Curtis Grant and the linebackers, they can't continue to be a weak spot on this team.
I'm going to go with something kind of different. I'm going to go with ball control for both teams. And something we saw against Michigan was that Ohio State's defense allowed a lot of long drives, allowed them to convert on third and five or shorter. And something that hurt them was that they don't have a lot of depth on the defensive line. And if they want to keep those guys fresh, they're going to have to be able to run the ball successfully. And Ohio State running the ball successfully also means that Melvin Gordon cannot run the ball successfully. Mm-hmm. So that is my key to the game. Doug, why don't you give us a score prediction?
I'm going to have to direct your loyal listeners to Cleveland.com on Friday, where I will nail my pick. I can't drop it early in the week. I will say this. I thought the last 2 weeks against Michigan and Indiana, I was very concerned by Ohio State's sort of stagnant offense early on. Really quick starts, and then the offense stagnated. I thought Ohio State won both those games in the end because they wore down an inferior opponent with their talent. I think Wisconsin had better talent than that. I think the slow start, tie game in the third quarter, hope you pull away idea is not going to work for Ohio State this week.
So my prediction, I think this is a really hard game to predict, obviously, as we have no idea what the offense is going to look like. We can only guess right now. But I just think I think Ohio State's going to win 31-30 because for no other reason than
you're on the Ohio State, football
podcast. I don't really have any good reasons other than hopefully Melvin Gordon can possibly be stopped by this defense.
We'll see. Like I said, the depth on this defensive line scares me, but I think Ohio State has the playmakers to do it. I don't know if Wisconsin's defense is really as good as advertised, seeing as they haven't played much. Cardale Jones says he can throw it through a wall. Hopefully he can throw it through some Wisconsin defenders. I got Ohio State 24-21 this weekend. Hopefully that'll be the case, and then some dominoes will fall ahead of them, and they can end up in the playoff. Doug, thank you very much for joining us. No worries about the score prediction. We'll take a look on Friday.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely, and that is Doug Lamorese of Cleveland.com. He covers Ohio State football, and that will do it for us. For Colin Hosshill, we'll see you at 8:17 on Fox Saturday in Indianapolis. But until then, I'm Daniel Hribner, and go Bucks.